Well, hello there, you amazing people out there, and welcome to the amazing Action Comics podcast, where we are all about independent comics. I'm one of your hosts, Angel, with John Pepe.
How's it going, Angel?
Well, it's a Thursday. It's 10 a.m., so that means we are live, brother. How have you been?
I've been good. This zit is not getting any better, but other than that, things are good, man.
Again, if you didn't point it out, I probably wouldn't have noticed. Now that's all I can see.
It's a thing now. Yeah, they've made it a thing as of last week.
So. Your lips moving, but all I see is a zit.
Because I'm obsessed with it now. Everybody has to be obsessed with it.
All right. Welcome, gang, to another episode of the Indie Comic Review. This is episode 128 or 29, somewhere around there. We're getting up there. I want to hit 150. Yeah, 129. So we're going to do something special for 150. Maybe we'll do like an all black, just black screen podcast. That'd be cool.
We'll do a silent podcast, like the silent issue of G.I. Joe.
Oh, yeah. Better yet, maybe a Kung Fu.
There we go.
And then we go, we'll figure it out. All right, cool. We don't really have any news this week. It's been kind of light on the indie front news, except for the one big thing, right?
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Spawn 350.
350. We talked about this a little bit like last week, but yeah, it happened.
I have it. I haven't read it yet. I think out of 350 issues, if I'm going to be honest, I probably read just a little over 100. Okay. So I still got a lot of reading to do. There was that, you know, horror stage that he went through.
Yeah.
That kind of took me out of it because I was like, this is not what I want out of my Spawn. But begrudgingly, I still bought them, so I still have them, and one day maybe I will read them. But we'll see. I like that it went back, like at 300 is kind of when it went back to its root art style. And with Barbieri taking over, and I think that group, that creative team, is switching relatively soon as well.
So Brett Booth, I think, is now going to be doing interiors on Spawn,
right?
And Glapion, whoever the current artist is going over to one of the King Gunslinger Scorch books. Yeah. One thing I thought that was neat about 350 is that it, I guess what he killed Malebolgia in 100. Spoiler alert, if anybody hasn't read to Spawn 100.
Spoiler.
But I guess he's now finally like, oh yeah, I got to do something about this big gaping hole in hell that I left with the leadership. So 250 issues later, he's finally getting around to, I guess, resolving that.
Right.
And I'm like, what have you been doing, Al Simmons? What have you been doing for 250 issues just without a guy running hell?
So. And that damn clock is still counting down. So, yeah, if you read it, just kind of let us know. I want to read it. I'm going to check it out. It's been a while since I read it consistently, but I definitely want to hop back into it. And I guess this is a really good jumping on issue to figure out what's going to be happening moving forward. There's also another spinoff, Rat City, by Erica Schultz. That's going to be coming out as well. So, yeah, I'm interested in checking that out. I mean, we're going to have a ton of Spawn books, so there's a whole Spawn universe out there.
Serious?
So if you haven't had a chance to get it, make sure you grab it. It's in your stores now, your local stores. All right, cool. I think that's pretty much what we have. So we're going to jump right into the indie comic reviews. I think we have about three books for you this week that we took a look at. So why don't you head us off first, John, with the first book you read.
Very good. Yes, three. That checks out with my math. All right. So this is from Keen Spot Entertainment. This is The Crying Boy. This is the variant cover. There are a lot of cool, terrifying covers. Clearly, this is a horror type thing, as you can tell by the cover. What's kind of neat about this, let me just get to the credits really quick. So this is written by Niall O'Rourke, illustrated by Rob Morin. Editor-in-chief Chris Crosby, President Bobby Crosby, and associate editor Rob Pochak. So that is your Keen Spot crew, and that is your creative crew for The Crying Boy. So this is that cool sort of mimeographed type art. So a lot of the characters, you know, they're it's almost like he took pictures of people and then ran them through a copier and then cut them and made them into artwork. A lot of like the early Brian Michael Bendis stuff. I think the Follow Me into Darkness, that guy, that series, he does a very similar thing. And it's cool. There's some pretty cool, terrifying imagery. Basically, you have a woman and her son, New York based, going from Brooklyn to Forest Hills, Queens, because her husband had just been murdered. He was a taxi driver and he was murdered. They move into this new house. It is 2015, and the previous owners of the house left behind this just awful, awful painting.
Oh, man, that's scary.
Yeah, so this is like, you know, whenever like somebody leaves a scary painting like that behind the house, leave. Just leave, because you're going to get into basically what this reminds me of are, you know, movies from the last couple year or last year or so. Movies like Rise, Evil Dead Rise, or Talk to the Hand. It's actually, I think, called Talk to Me, which is a good movie if you've seen that. So basically what you have are just sort of urban terror with an object sort of possessing and affecting people. And clearly this painting is the thing. Really, really terrifying image on the last page. I don't want to show just because I definitely want that to have some impact if anybody picks it up. Very well written, very, very easy to follow. In some aspects, the art sort of betrays the intensity or the horror in my mind, because it is, I know it's used a lot for these horror crime noir stuff, but to me, it's very Tom Goes to the Mayor. I don't know if you've ever seen that on Adult Swim. It's basically, it's a cartoon show, but that does the same thing. It's a Tim Heidecker, Eric Warheim type thing, if you're familiar with their work, very irreverent. And so in my mind, I think comedy when I see that kind of style, even though I'm used to it from like stuff that Brian Bendis used to do when he was doing his own illustrations and stuff like that. But it does, I feel for this, it really does convey a mood of just sort of how bleak everything is. And again, you know, as the secrets of the apartment are uncovered, you know, there was the fire previously. There was, a couple people died in the apartment. Clearly those spirits still remain. And it all does center around this painting of this crying boy. So really interesting setup. I really liked it. I've a couple hangups though I do have for Keenspot as a publisher. I think their material is great. I think they do really well with the horror stuff and the irreverent horror stuff. Chopping Block has been one of my favorite books. My only thing with Keenspot is they don't feel like they have a regular set shipping schedule. So subsequent issues, I feel, come out few and far between. I think Chopping Block is on issue 5 or 6, and that book started about a year and a half ago. Right. So there's that. There's also, they are at a $5.99 price point, which you get nice quality paper, good solid, you know, stock on the cover, not self cover. It is a true cover, you know, over where it feels like a true cover. Actually, no, you know what? It is the same thickness on this book. But anyway, and usually I feel like, again, with Chopping Block, you got extra pages for that $5.99. This does feel like a regular sized book. It is well paced for a first issue. It definitely had me intrigued. So I definitely am looking forward to seeing where this goes. I like that kind of cramped apartment horror thing, and you know, parent and child struggling against the dark forces. That's all really well and good and cool. I'm not gonna set my calendar on when the second issue of this is gonna come out, because I really won't know. But if you like some really weird horror, funky photostat black and white artwork, The Crying Boy, neat little concept. It is just new enough to feel fresh, but just familiar enough that you can ease right into what the story is being told.
Nice. All right, cool. And that's from Keenspot, right?
That is from Keenspot, yeah.
All right, wonderful. All right, I'm up. So second book is from Oni Press. Yes. I've lost since I've read anything from Oni Press.
Dwellings is good. You should have read that.
Oh, dude, you keep telling me about that, I can't. It just gets me out of it.
Talk about a juxtaposition, right? Like, yeah. But that's the appeal.
Cemetery Kids Don't Die. Pretty cool cover. The creative team. This is written by Zach Thompson, illustrated by Daniel Irizarry, colors by Brittany Peer, and lettered by Ann World Design. So let's just go over just the synopsis or just summary of the book. Basically, you have four kids, and it's crazy because as much as we've read, you start to just you know, you can call out the tropes for the groups and stuff like that. So every group has, you know, the one hyper kid, then you have the one depressed kid, and then you have the logical kid. It's all in here. So you got four, two of them are siblings, and basically they get together, their friends, and they play a game online. But this one's quite unique because you have to be sleeping in order to play it. So they put on this gear on their head, they go to sleep, and then they're inside the game. And then it's whatever you want it to be at. It's almost D&D-esque. They're talking to each other, and they're going through these different scenarios and missions. And basically one of them is diving or delving deeper into the game where the game is catching on to him. So when he awakes from their first experience of the game, he orders, he has like a slash on his neck, but we can't tell if he's seen that himself because he died in the game by having his throat slit. But what I couldn't tell is whether or not he was seeing that himself or other people could tell that it was there as well. So it's sort of like he's dreaming while he's awake and not in the game. And as the book progresses, it just gets, you know, a little bit more weird in regards to what's happening to him and how he's kind of melding with the game. And at the very end, you see something that just really throws everybody off and scares the crap out of his sister in that sense. So, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, for a first issue, there's some good character development. I think where I was lost in the very beginning was I couldn't tell they were in the game until we were a couple pages in, and they kind of almost halfway through the book explained what was going on in that regards. I think for me, what probably would have separated reality and the game is maybe a different color palette or shading, or maybe even an art style, because they've done that in the past where the art style is different from what's going on in reality, or just gray toning it out, or just using a different color palette for that particular world. But because the color palette was consistent throughout, it made it seem like everything was just the same in that respect, so if that makes any sense. But as far as the read, I mean, the read was pretty easy to follow once you go along with the story. The art, there's pages that are like quite detailed. The character designs are pretty cool in regards to the warriors and stuff like that they choose, and the power sets. It probably would have been kind of cool too to see if, like, I don't know, because it is a game, maybe some of like the hit points or like a bar or something like that, maybe that would have differentiated, you know, reality from what's going on in the game. Obviously, the costumes and everything differentiate what's going on, but who knows? You could do cosplay in real life. But yeah, if I had any pet peeve about the book, it was just that the color palette was clean all the way throughout, which I like the color palette itself. But if they would distinguish between reality and when they were in the game, I think that would have, you know, probably took it over the edge on that, which would have been great. Left you with a good cliffhanger at the very end. I don't want to give too much away. But yeah, I mean, it's a good first issue. I think it's one of those books where I think I'm probably going to, you know, be better off reading it in full trade, just in one sitting and to get the entire story out. But if you like sort of like that D&D gaming experience, you know, diving into it, this is sort of a take on it, which is pretty unique in regards to how they play it and how the game is affecting one of the individual's reality. Cemetery Kids, Don't Die from Oni Press. Good stuff, Oni.
Yeah, I read this too. I actually liked it. It's funny how you said, yeah, this book does not let a trope go by without at least addressing it. And it's funny because from the title, I thought it was like, this is going to be more like a Little Monsters or a nightclub type situation. So the title sort of belied, you know, was kind of countered, I think, to what was actually going on in the book.
Right.
Really dug the art style. It's very sort of Bob Fingerman type indie to me, or even a little bit like Robert Crumb esque, where it's cartoony and it does push, right? But it's still grounded. So right. It's easy to follow. It's not too out there, but there's sort of a very, very cartoony aspect to the characters that I kind of thought was cool. Even more so them in their real lives than in their crazy gear, right? Which is all overdone. And, you know, whatever they're wearing in the game is all very, you know, elaborate and overdone. But them as in their real life look very cartoony. But you know, I've seen people that, you know, have that hairstyle or have those.
Right. Like that.
Depending on where this goes, I think it's a great sort of high school age, almost all ages type book, maybe not for the younger set because of some of the subject matter, but it's not overly adult. It's not overly violent. It's not, you know, really not dealing with heavy sexual themes. So it does feel sort of like a good romp with a good mystery. I am hoping we get more of, who made this game? Why is the game designed to do what it seems to be doing, especially to this one character in the story? Or is that something that's just going to be left untouched? I don't know. But I thought it was a solid first issue, very well paced. Felt like we got just enough, right, to get what was going on and then set up the next issue. Didn't feel like it shorted us on anything at the regular page count or dragged anything out. So, yeah, it was really good. But again, it's not necessarily something I personally would gravitate towards if I wasn't specifically looking for something to review. But I think for all those reasons that we talked about, if you like the video gaming world, you like a cool little mystery, mm-hmm. you like contemporary characters, give it a shot. I thought it was a really solid first issue. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right, guys, check it out. Kids, Cemetery Kids, Don't Die.
Yes.
Only Press. All right, last but not least.
Yes, you knew this was happening after a couple weeks ago, and I made that discovery that The One Hand is a companion book to The Six Fingers. So
it is. It's connected, right?
Yeah, they are connected. So The One Hand is – so it's a 800-something years in the future. This is it's like sort of a seven-type murder mystery. So The One Hand is following the cop. And that is written by Ram V and illustrated, I believe, if I'm getting this correct, by Lawrence Campbell. And then The Six Fingers is actually following the killer. Mm. So right away, we know who the serial killer is as readers. So it's the fun will be in seeing if the cop can get to this guy. This is written by this half of it's 2 5-issue miniseries, I believe, running every 2 weeks. Back to back, like sort of. So the next book will be The One Hand number 2. Right. 2 weeks after that, be The Six Fingers number 2. This half is written by Dan Waters, illustrated by Sumit Kumar, colored by Lee Loughridge, lettered by Aditya Bidikar, designed by Tom Mueller, edited by Will Dennis, production artist Erica Schnatz. So the whole idea, I guess, so Dan Waters and Ram V created both half of these together, and then the other creator credit, the third creator credit for Six Fingers go to the artist. The third creator credit for One Hand goes to Lawrence Campbell, the artist there. So that being said, do you need to read both to get the full story? Obviously, sure, maybe you do to get both sides of the story. But as of now, these two first issues are great standalones. So if you are holding off on getting The Six Fingers because you didn't get The One Hand, or if you're like, oh, I don't want to get The Six Fingers. I just kind of, you know, I like The One Hand, but that's fine. Like, both of them as of now seem to think they could still exist separately. The connections are really, are the circumstances, but each one is told from a different point of view and each one's telling a different story. And what I found very interesting about this, so The One Hand, the artwork was very, that dark, scratchy, noir, moody art. Mm. The art in this is a lot more sort of what you would expect, a lot more clean, a lot more bright, a lot more comic booky. So whereas one really just made you feel dirty and gross, this minimizes that, right? So it's actually really easy to kind of step into this one. And I think that's interesting. It's an interesting way to go, because the cop that you're following in The One Hand is not a nice guy. He is on the verge of retirement, but he is the, you know, the grizzled, gross, you know, lone wolf cop, you know, with the stubble and the smoking and the greasy hair and whatever. Like, he's a very unsavory character for a good guy. And the guy here who, you know, again, you know, he's the killer, is a likable guy. He's a guy who has, you know, a real terrible job and is, you know, has ideas to be better. And, you know, he's working towards a certain degree and a certain project that he wants to do that's has to do with archaeology in the 21st century. And he gets rejected from that. And it's really interesting because it does feel as if the serial killer part of him is not even informed by anything that's going on in his day to day. It's just sort of a thing that has happened to him. So I thought that was really neat. So the contrast in tone is not what you would expect in that respect. So I thought that was really cool. It was a really good counter. It just wasn't more of the same from what we got in The One Hand. This is a different beast entirely. It explains why he has the sixth finger. It also leans more into the futuristic aspects of this world than the One Hand did. So again, I think it's a great concept. I think these two books countering each other are really cool. They're both very different experiences and telling two sides of basically the same story. And I think it's a fascinating concept. So I'm really excited to see what else happens in this. This is a great setup for who this guy is, and expands that world that we saw in The One Hand even further. So yeah, really neat stuff. And it's great because there is, you know, when you do this type of thing, you have to, speaking of tropes, you have to have that moment where two characters literally bump into each other. And you're like, you go back and you're like, oh, that's where that happened in that book. And here it is happening in this book. So I like that sort of like, you know, oh, yeah, look, there is that one bit of connection between the two books. And now you can kind of see how everything plays out from that one moment. So,
right. That's what I was going to ask. Is there a point in each one of the books where they do cross paths?
Literally, it's, yeah, they bump into each other in like the crowded street or whatever. And it's like, oh, I'm sorry. And then that's it, you know, that happens in both books. So that's kind of cool, right?
And you kind of see it from their perspective on that particular situation.
Yeah, yeah. You see why this guy was so preoccupied that he winds up bumping into the cop as he's going from A to B. And you already know what the cop's head was at. Yeah, so it is. You have that one moment in time where they do interact, unknowingly. Yeah,
but then other than that, like, so he's committed a murder, and say this cop is investigating the murder.
Yeah,
they don't. He doesn't know. Like the serial killer doesn't know that our cop is investigating him.
Yeah, exactly. So then that in where they bump into each other, it is not in that context at all. They're just passing each other on the street. So that's the thing. It's like if you're just reading The One Hand, you have no idea, right? Like who the killer is and what's going on. So that's going to be a mystery and a discovery there if you're just reading The One Hand.
Right, right.
And then with the six fingers, you're just watching this journey of this good, this seemingly good guy in his descent into, you know, being a serial killer, for whatever reasons we'll find out, without any idea of the police investigation that's going on.
That's funny.
Very much that's like funny. I think if you were that guy, you know, like,
when you explained it to me previously, because you had read The One Hand and said that this was going to be coming out, and I had mentioned, you know, why didn't they do it as a flip book like the Tim Seeley book, Local Man?
Yeah,
this makes more sense.
You need they need room to breathe, right?
I'm trying to think, has it been done before? Where you had two simultaneous books. I mean, the last one would probably be that Wolverine book. But that would, this seems really interesting, the concept, you know, of an event happening and having two perspectives and not really, not them being what you would think that they would be.
Right.
Like the cop that's been in the business or been in the job for too long, just ready to get out and just hates the entire world. And then you got this clean serial killer who just kind of snaps and stuff like that. So it's going to be interesting. And you said it's a 5-issue mini?
I think both are 5-issue minis. So, yeah, I think it's 5 or 6. I think I remember seeing that somewhere. So, yeah, they're not ongoing. So, obviously, there is an end game. And it's going to be for the finale.
Yeah.
I mean, the way the publishing schedule shakes out, unless they do some adjusting, the final chapter will be the Six Fingers, number 5.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see how the one hand will wrap up. Are they going to wrap up at the same point in time? And you're just going to see the same thing from two different perspectives. I mean, yeah, this has been done, like you said, X Lives, X Death of Wolverine. And usually it's something in the main two. Remember a great example of this was in the 80s during, when Wills Portacio was on Punisher. Was Pets mm-hmm. and Punisher, mm-hmm. and there was an issue where Punisher encounters the Daredevil, and you see it from Punisher's point of view. That same month, there's an issue of Daredevil where you see the same thing from Daredevil's point of view.
Nice.
And that was Romita Jr. doing the art on that point, I think, on one of his like 15 runs on Daredevil.
Right.
And so, so things like that I've seen definitely in the mainstream and the superhero, you know, even in events, you're going to have two things, you know, but to do it this way as an indie, as a, again, this is Image, by the way, that's doing this. But to do this in a way that, you know, where you're just, it's just two new series that are going back and forth to each other. I don't think I've ever seen this outside of mainstream comics, this sort of concept to this level, which I think is great.
Now, the next question is, I wonder how they're going to do the trade. Is it going to be one? Is it going to be two separate trades?
I think it's going to be two separate trades. Because again, you get more money that way. You maximize it that way.
And you still have a complete story with just reading.
You still have a complete story. And that's the thing, because these stories are designed. You know, they could be read 5 issues here or 5 issues here. It's just, again, and this illustrates the fun of getting floppy comics on the reg, because it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be collected that way. They might do a combined,
an omnibus kind of,
where they go back and forth,
right,
but this really plays into the strength of getting one half of the, you know, one part of the story and then waiting 2 weeks to get the other part and to see where they connect and to see where it goes. So this concept again is great because it is sort of one of those things that that will drive people to the comic shops, like the stuff that Bad Idea does, right? One of the best things that Bad Idea was, they got people in the shops on Wednesdays, right? So this kind of idea is great because if you are a regular floppy collector, it keeps you coming back and anticipation and looking for more stuff. So
cool. I like it. Yeah, you can post it on that, because I think I want to wait for the trade on that one.
Yeah.
But that should be pretty cool. So the hand, and then this one is Six Fingers.
Yeah, the one hand and Six Fingers. It's very cool stuff. Very neat from concept.
Image Comics.
Yeah.
All right, sweet. Well, it's a short one today, guys.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all we have for you. So we have the three books. You have The Crime Boy from King Spot, which you dug. We got The Cemetery Kids Don't Die from Oni Press, which seems like a pretty cool concept. There was just a couple of things that I had in it. Listen. Like I said, we don't shit on anything. Sometimes we gravitate towards something. Sometimes we don't connect to it. I think there was something that could have been done a little bit different to kind of differentiate those worlds. But other than that, it was a really clean read. Really interesting concept as well. I like to see where they're going to go with it. So I'll probably wait on the trade for that and pick it up and read it on one good sitting. And then you have The Six Fingers from Image Comics, which is a complimentary book to The One Hand. Or The Hand.
Yeah. The One Hand.
Yeah. The One Hand. Yeah, which is going back and forth. Yeah, dude, super interesting concept.
It's so neat. It's neat. And again, I think I said this last time, like, so the murder is very Seven-esque, especially with the cop on the verge of retirement. It's very, like, very much Seven. The murders are very grotesque that we've seen so far. But
is he leaving clues?
Yeah, well, so there's this specific right, because, so this is the whole thing, the cop from The One Hand, has sort of busted this same type of killer twice before, but one was a copycat, right? And possibly might not have actually been the killer. And that's sort of a subplot that's playing out in The One Hand. And the killer is compelled to leave these sort of, let's see if I can get a good shot of this. He's compelled to leave basically like these sort of like hieroglyphic things.
So these
markings are on the wall, as well as a handprint in blood. And it's a neat little bit where in the one hand, you notice the cop notices the smudge and he's like, wait a minute, this guy has six fingers, right? That it leads to that. So, and you find out why he has six fingers in this too. And so it's sort of, so there's these earmarks, these hallmarks of this one hand killer that the cop has dealt with in the past. And now here he is again, or is it him? Is it a copycat? Again, cool little mystery. And this idea of having, you know, going back and forth between the cop and the killer and really getting inside the killer's head and not leaving that a mystery, very much like the Thomas Harris novels, Red Dragon, Silence of the Lambs, stuff like that. But again, normally something like this is done by the same creative team. The idea of doing it with two different creative teams means you have two different looks, two different voices.
Which is smart, I think.
I think it's such a great idea.
It's two different people.
Yeah, and yeah.
Oftentimes, when you have the same person writing two different people, there's some character traits that carry over.
Yeah.
I think when you have two creative teams writing back and forth, knowing the story, but writing it from a different perspective, super clever.
When I got to the end of the one hand and I saw that there was this other half, I was like, oh, this is exciting. And this is, I've never really seen something quite like this before. And then this delivered for me, this six hand.
Nice.
Six-finger number one.
Well, we'll see where it goes. All right, kiddies, that's all that we have for you this week. If you like what you heard on this little short one this week, subscribe to the podcast. Better yet, tell 100 other people to subscribe to the podcast. If you want to join us, you're a creator, want to come onto the show, want to talk comics, want to talk about a project that you have that you are working on, amazingactioncomics.com/podcast, fill out the form. I believe we have a guest next week, which is confirming that. We're looking to get as many people on here, promote as many people, as many creations as possible. So, get on that. Stay up to date on everything that we got going on at amazingactioncomics.com. And as always, please support your local comic shop so they stay around. John, where do you get your comics from?
Well, I get my comics at The Joker's Child in Fairlawn, New Jersey. I'm going to let you know, man, the world is kind of tough right now. There's a lot of bad stuff going on, and I think it's just going to kind of escalate a little bit for as we go traveling through this year. But I'll tell you, man, you know what's great? Comic books. It was even better than comic books. Go into your local comic shop to get your comic books. And then you could sit there, you could talk about how terrible the world is, but boy, how great are these comics? Because local comic shops, they're sort of like a community. They're sort of like a clubhouse, and everybody is invited. And you know where everybody else is invited? At The Joker's Child in Fairlawn, New Jersey. So if you're in Fairlawn or any part of New Jersey, stop on down. Otherwise, go down to your local comic shop, have some conversation, buy some comics, and just, you know what? Share in the love of a great hobby / medium.
I couldn't say it better or shorter myself.
You could have said it much better and much shorter.
All right, kiddies. Until next time, please be amazing. Stay amazing. And read something amazing.